You're listening to the War Machine and Hordes UK and Ireland Super Series podcast. Welcome to the War Machine and Hordes UK and Ireland Super Series. This is Chris Young here, and I am joined today by
James White from the Midlands Meta, and I play Trolls.
Brilliant. Round two. Doing even better. Ryan Evans from Bristol.
Hello. I'm Ryan. Hello.
And Terry Slade from the South Wales Meta. I play Legion.
I'm Rich from North West, and I play Scorn.
Brilliant. And on the agenda today, we are going to go through some of the first events. We're going to cover the qualifier, or as we like to call it, how can a man win an event when he can't work or push the talk button? And then eventually we're going to do the topic for today, which will be to do with CID and future outcomings and all that kind of stuff. So what I'll do is I'll just go through our first events. We've had the first events already happen, but the ones coming up in January. So we have the Midlands first one for Powerfist and Stafford. That's on the 7th of January. We've got one in Southwest at BIG on the 13th of January. The War Game Store in the Northwest on the 20th of January. And that one is sold out already, but get on the reserve list if you need to. And then the North East, which is the Super Series Huddersfield qualifier on the 14th of January. So if you need, if you're not already signed up or if you want to get involved, obviously get in touch with the local representatives. They're on our website, the wmhukiss.co.uk website. And then James, you're running the Midlands one, if you've got any extra details for people.
Yeah, definitely. So firstly, it's being held at Elm Avenue, Stafford, ST170NA. It's a good bunch of lads there, and it was initially a 16-man event, but they actually filled all the spots. And about a couple of days ago, they've extended 24 men. So there's still plenty of spots open, and it should be a really good four-round event now.
Nice.
Good cool stuff. So you were talking as well, Rich, because you're running the War Game Store. Item, is there any thoughts on the front there for increasing it past 16, man?
Yeah, we sold out for 16, so we'll have a reserve list. So if you are interested, let us know, because we may look at running a couple of flights or just extend it past 16 and go for four rounds. So we'll, we'll see. So yeah, give us a shout.
Awesome. Right then.
And then, so... Ryan, are you running the big one down in Southwest? Is that one of yours, Ryan?
Yeah, it'll be me running it. So it'll follow the format of our series of events last year, which is standard steamroller, but we run at dust clock, but with only a 50-minute dust clock rather than an hour. It's bad hardcore practice for... It is hardcore. The cutthroat Bristol Master, obviously. so it's bad practice for the big event, and it means we can all get home at a decent time, so it's better all round.
So it is go big or go home.
Basically.
Yeah.
I see what you did there.
I'm here all episode.
How are tickets going, Ryan? How many spots are left?
Come again?
How many spots are left so far for big? How many tickets are left for it?
It's not capped as such, in that we've got the space to expand as needed. So they generally average around like 14 and 20 spaces, but obviously we've got tons of space out the back, so I think we can probably go up to about 32 if need be, and then we'll just cap to the top four after four rounds for the Bristol Steamroller Finals.
Sweet!
Sounds good. So yeah, if you want to get down there, you can be supervised by the first qualifier for the UK and Ireland Super Series. First man, the legend. Right, so actually to go into more detail on that, we have both the organiser of the event, Terry, and the qualifier himself. So I'll just go to Terry first, just give us an overview of the event and the plans that are going on for Firestorm.
All right then. So the event was held on the 25th of November, just gone. We had around about 20, maybe 22 through the door. I can't remember exactly how many, but we were really stoked to have that many. It was fantastic. Our winner was somebody you may have heard of, Ryan Evans.
Or not, if he didn't press push to talk.
So it was 75 points, two lists, and we cap at four rounds. We're quite fortunate in that Firestorm has got, you know, endless space, essentially. So we're able to accommodate easily 30 players, if not more. But we had a good turnout, really good show in, really enjoyed it. We had people come from all over the place. I think the hype for the UKIS has been really good. We had players from Oxfordshire, Swindon, Bristol, obviously the Welsh boys as well. So if anyone does want to come down to the next one, the next qualifying event is the 27th of January 2018, and that's a four-round event. Tournament organizer is Byron Lyles, but you can also get in touch with me as well because we share the burden on that. And yeah, really good to see you.
So that one's running a little differently from this event, wasn't it?
Yeah, this was a one-off qualifier. When Rich got in touch with me regarding the UKIS, we'd already booked kind of our whole 12-month diary of tournaments in. So you guys were really, really good in kind of accommodating what we already had planned. So the previous event was a standalone with one qualifier. And then very much mirroring what they do over at Big, next year we've got our summer series, which is three events. And four players qualify from each event, which gives you 12. And there will be four wild cards as well that will be drawn from people that have turned up to the previous events. That'll lead to a 16-player finals event then in the summer. And there'll be a qualifier, sorry, two qualifiers from that event will go through to UKIS.
Cool. And the fourth is going to be the top Welsh at Welsh Masters, isn't it, this year?
It is, yeah, yeah. Which won't
good
be
stuff.
Me.
So lots of pressure on that event. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always been sort of you know, the Welsh players have always really felt that's quite important, whoever finishes highest at the Welsh. So it's a good indicator of player skill, and whoever finishes highest will hopefully be a good representative in the finals.
Awesome. Have we got Ryan's insight in going across the border and winning the first spot in the UK series as well? Because he's first through the door, isn't he, Chris? Ryan, he's first on the list. He is allowed in.
He at the final. We're not even the same year, and Ryan obviously saw his moment to strike and crossed over the border under the cover of night, I believe, through barbed wire, past a few sheep, or quite a lot of sheep. And took down the Welsh, I believe. So, Brian, do you want to give us a bit of insight into how it all went down? I'm sure it wasn't too dissimilar to how I described it.
Yeah, sure. So, I will preface this by saying I didn't actually realise on the day that it was a qualifier for the Super Series. I thought it was just a steamroller, and so I just brought two lists that I thought would be quite fun to play, which is obviously Ghost Fleet and Witch Coven. So, fun for all the family.
Lists to make friends with.
Yeah, so this is, I can't remember the timing of it, whether it was before the CID or after or during, but I kind of had an inkling that Denny One was either going to be nerfed quite harshly or it was either in process, one or the other. So, I brought Gatsby 1 Ghost Fleet because I played a lot of him before like selling my soul and playing Denny 1 Ghost Fleet. And then I paired that with, that's fairly standard Ghost Fleet, by the way. So like three nodes and a stalker and then more pirates and you can be asked to count. And then I paired that with Witch Coven in Scourge of the Broken Coast, not Dark Coast. So Scourge of the Broken Coast is kind of the new kid on the block with the Tixes, but I backed that up with, so I was running double Raiders, single Blood Witches, double Node, and then triple Caesar, because The Aggregor's Black Mantler sculpts like a triple C the build across the board quite well. So, kind of quick battle reports, I guess. The first game was Signar, which I was kind of hoping to dodge. So I ended up getting Nemo 1 with Fireflies and Thunderhead and lightning everywhere. Lots of pirates died. Nemo forgot to feed, so I could art spell and killed him. So that was kind of a mistake on my opponent's part, not defeat. If he's feeding my art, it would have been disrupted. And it was a dead scenario, so I think I possibly could have clocked him because he spent a lot of time. But as it turns out, just killing the old man Nemo is quite a reliable plan. So then, second game was into Legion, where I had a Thagros 1 and Absalonia 2 pairing, but the Absalonia 2 list was lots of heavies and an Argo, so he had access to magic weapons for Ghost Fleet. The Thagros 1 list does have access to small amounts of RFP with Mutagenesis, but it didn't have an Argo, so I didn't really know what to drop, but I figured pirates are pretty good, so I dropped pirates. And then I was fortunate enough to win the starting role, so I ran up, and then he runs up, and then actually all my Ratfall guns start shooting his swordsmen and spellmasters and all sorts of support pieces that he doesn't want to die. So I spent ages trying to position all my revenants so that he couldn't get good spray lanes with Typhon, Zuriel, Thagros himself, and they wouldn't be able to dig deep enough with Azrael. But in the process of doing that with all the pirates, I forgot to actually back up Gaspy himself. So Gaspy is actually in range of all of Typhon's sprays on a walk and spray, Zuriel's sprays on a charge and quick work. And then Azrael was just kind of in a casual like walking chuck threat range. So
everything was... everything.
Yeah, basically.
It was just a bait though, wasn't it, Ryan? You were doing this on purpose.
No, listen, I remember passing turn and then sitting down again. I forgot to back Gaspy up to the back of the wall. I stood like in front of the wall, but the wall was kind of like on an angle and I was stood on the front corner, not the back corner. But so I was camping for and under the race engine, so it all kind of tickled and then bounced off, and then Gaspy kept poking Thagros with the auto hit and stick until he died, so that kind of worked out okay.
As I said, it was a bait. You were obviously just wanting to draw them all out, weren't you?
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. It's all part of the plan. So then round three was into Kador running Karchev and Social One. At this point I couldn't remember if it's Divide and Conquer or not, so I thought I'd play my second list and see what I got. Covenant Sedixis in general are quite okay into Kador. So that was, he brought Social One, which was interesting in that, so I managed to win the starting role, pushed up really aggressively, playing like a really wide game so that he couldn't get freezing grip on a unit without wind rushing, so that basically, if he walks and wind rushes to get freezing grip, he's then within 12 inches of a Caesar somewhere, which is pretty bad. Or basically, so he can't charge one of my models, wind rush deeper, and then feet. So kind of trying to play a really wide game so that then when he does feet, I can kind of retaliate with whatever I've got left. And Social One's feet is not great under Coven's feet, and that limits it quite a lot. So I ran up, he ran up, took some pot shots. Then I purposely didn't feet turn two because ideally I want him to choose a side feet, and then I can basically counterattack on the side he didn't feet on, counterfeet myself, so that then whatever I've got left that pushes through on that side just kind of rolls around. Kind of conceding one flank, but then just overpowering him on the other side. But he got a little bit ballsy with Sorcia, so there was so we're playing the pit too. So there's the circular zone and the two letterboxes either side, and there's a dense fog in the middle of the circular zone. So he checks when he's moving Sorcia. Oh, Sorcia can't. His Caesars can't see through clouds, can they? No, they can't. So then he pushes up Sorcia so that she's outside like Infernal Machine, Walk Range of a Caesar, because they have to charge or run. They can't trample to get a melee with her. But in the process of setting this up, he put his Destroyer a little bit to Sorcia's right, and Behemoth a little bit to Sorcia's left, where I was actually able to get a slither of line of sight to eat with the Caesar and end in melee with Sorcia. So the way the focus works out is I had enough focus to cast Infernal Machine on both Caesars if needed, allocate two to them, and then Ghostwalk, the one that was like dipping some terrain. So as it was, like the first Caesar went in on Behemoth, used a shitty tusk attack, and then like hit Sorcia twice with the pimp hand and she died, so that was all right.
Death by pimp hand.
Yeah. I did apologise and I said, like, I don't normally play quick games, but if you're going to give me Sorcia on a silver platter, then I'm going to take it because I don't want to play a long game against Sorcia. And then the last round, we're playing one of the Welsh boys, I think, Luke. So he was playing crits as well. So crits is obviously fair and balanced with the double crits finals. And he was running two Dark Coast lists. So he was running Coven Dark Coast with what did he have? Double Riders, Wraith Engine, Double Min Warriors, and then I think he's running the Desecrator version, which is inferior to my version with the Reaper, obviously.
But you tested the Desecrator version, so you know.
Yeah. And his other list was Scar 1, Dark Coast, but with only one Wraith Engine, Double Riders, and like Max Bane Warriors and Dower Wrath, I think. I actually prefer that version of Scar because I think it's got a little better attrition-wise rather than the Double Wraith Engine. But I looked at his list and he's playing Double Dark Coast, so there's hardly any magic weapon. And I've got a Wraith Engine, a Max Black Banes and Ghost Fleet, so I dropped Ghost Fleet because I'm quite happy with it in the mirror. And as it was, I basically pushed up everything with a gun as far as it could go, turn one. So then he feats bottom of one. So all I did was basically jammed him with pirates. So Bane Riders aren't getting any vengeance because I've killed nothing. I've contested the scenario with more incorporeal than he can reliably kill. He can't put a witch on his flag. To score that. Tartarus wasn't near his flag to score that. So we talked about it after the game. He kind of wasted his feet in that I said, you absolutely want to be getting some attrition advantage with Coven's feet, not just feet defensively. As it shook out, he got quite a good alpha the turn after where he managed to kill a lot of pirates and had to take out like one of my nodes that are contesting his own. But ultimately he didn't score any CPs. It took quite a lot of time doing that, and then over the next kind of 2 to 3 turns, the pirates just started grinding out the Bane Riders, because like Revenant Crew just with size and tech trade really well with Bane Riders, and I think I used Gatsby's feet to kill to get the focus I needed to fuel one of the nodes, I think, to do some melee and then fire off a Parasite and a Hellfire into his Wraith Engine before Rengrave then went beast mode on it and killed it himself. So that was quite cool. And then from there, it's just a kind of scenario slash attrition win where I've got Incorporeal and a lot of recursion, and he's got no answer to the Incorporeal and very little recursion. So Ghost Fleet OP, I guess.
the way you played that game now, it's something that I saw you do a lot when we were playing practice games last year, and that's just being really patient for the first few turns of the game, especially against like a control feat. So instead of panicking and like throwing everything away, just like know that you need to just keep your key pieces alive for a few turns and then start the grind like turn three.
I see a lot of people do. Like I say, a lot of people do it with Coven, I see people do it with Scar, I see people do it with Tenny One where they feed defensively, and actually, you don't actually stop yourself losing very much. You still lose a little bit, but actually, if you'd held your feet for the turn where you're actually going to get to counterpunch, it carries you through the following turn, so sometimes it's better to lose, like I did it when I was playing down one of the locals in Bristol. Can't remember what I was playing against, but I ended up losing. I was playing Gatsby 1. I ended up losing, I think, 14 of my 22 statistics when I was playing Coven. But then actually between losing the statistics meant the Caesars didn't die. So then the remaining like 8-10 statistics or so, plus the Captain, Ragman, the Caesar, they all go in under the protection of Coven's feet, and then hardly anything dies under Coven's feet, at which point it all gets to go again. And it's, until you've done it, all I can say is, like with Coven, when you're playing practice games, you almost want to go, should I feat this turn? If you think you're going to feat, hold it for a turn and just see what happens.
Yeah, it's funny. Do you remember like Mark II, Runes of War? I remember a Jason Flanzer interview where I think he said exactly the same thing with Doomy's feat. He's like, everyone's to feat defensively, and if you can, just wait a turn, and it's usually backbreaking. Like, you think you're going to lose the game because you've lost more pieces, but actually you just get two full turns of work out of everything that's left, and it's usually more than one turn of work out of some of your stuff.
Yeah, absolutely, and it just kind of, it snowballs over the long game, and that you go, well, actually, if you've got like a really strong feat, then actually you can ride through like some astronomical attrition disadvantages just by basically feating at the right time. And it's hard until you've done it. As in, if you feat early and the game kind of goes okay and you still win, then you go, well, I feated at the right time. Whereas actually you might have feated at an okay time, but it doesn't mean to say there wasn't a better time.
Don't you hold the record for the latest in game Denny one feat at Nationals?
I think that was turn 5. Either turn 5 or turn 6, I can't remember.
In a 7-turn game with Denny. Oh my god. That was the final as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the finals. I had to kill Anissa. She was in the zone and she was in combat, and I was like, I can't afford to risk a debuff, so I guess I've got a feat now.
Saving your feet from all. Nice. But hey, you took it home. Nice one.
Quick slide.
Yeah, my feet. Denny one's feet was used to kill a gremlin swarm and Anissa. Definitely worth it.
Okay, well, congratulations anyway, being the first finalist. So you've got a further 15 people that are going to be fighting their way to challenge Ryan's dominance. He's a bit lonely there at the moment, so obviously get out there and start doing the steamrollers. Just one question from me, and obviously I'll open up to everyone else to ask some questions as well. For all the other people that are obviously going to be they're setting their eyes on certain steamrollers and things that they want to qualify. Now, you mentioned obviously like Nationals and Welsh and stuff where you could potentially be playing over 128 people. Whereas at these steamroller events, we're sort of looking at a lot smaller amount of people, potentially like local players. So, I mean, from your perspective, in this case, you didn't know it was a qualifier. So you kind of, I imagine, just turned up with the list you want to play. Do you think it's probably better to try and think about what you're potentially going to play into? Or would you always try and do just your set practice lists? Which one do you think is better?
So I think there's kind of there are two schools of thought in that some people are practicing for bigger events, whereas others are, they're trying to game the field. And I think there's merit to both sides of the argument in that if you want to play the field and you've got a reasonable understanding of the players that are going to be there and what they're likely to be playing, then I guess it depends on where you're going as well. As in, like between Bristol and Firestorm, both of the steamrollers that like me and Terry are running there are attracting quite a wide crowd at the moment in terms of the geographical distribution of people that are turning up. So actually, if you want to try and plan for what people are going to be bringing, then it's quite hard to do. Whereas if you're traveling up to London, you can bet your bottom dollar that the Pat Dunford's probably going to be there. So you need to plan for a good Grimkin player if you've got any inkling of winning the event. Well, whether you can beat Pat or not, even if you tech for him, is, I'm not even going to entertain that as a question. But if you go to London, you have to plan for it because you know that he's more than likely going to be there. Whereas I think for us, it's quite hard at the moment in that we get quite a varied field of people, and even the people that come aren't that, they're not that consistent in what they're playing, in that, like, one of our local Menoth players has been playing Vindictus Amon for a long time. So then for our last event, just before we break up for the year, we did one last steamroller, he turned up with Thyra and Durst. So Durst is really good in Faithful Masses, but it just goes to show that actually taking a pairing that's Vindictus Amon and swapping it for Durst Thyra presents completely different problems. So if you tech for the Amon Vindictus, you're just going to get shafted by the Durst Thyra. So I don't think you can plan too much. You almost want a varied pair, maybe with a couple of tech pieces tweaked for the people you might expect to play or have to beat to win.
Also, you don't have to think about it as much, really. You know, besides, these are my lists, I'm going to play them. Fuck that.
Is that the benefit of Cricks or a benefit of confidence?
Probably both. <Yeah. laughs> What are you taking? Oh, that's nice. I'm still taking host. Yeah.
I can't even deny.
Yeah.
One of the benefits that that I've recently realised is I started running tournaments only a few months ago after taking over from our previous press ganger. I no longer have to tech for Ryan, because he comes to my tournaments and I go to his tournaments. So
brilliant.
Dodge that bullet.
Yeah, done. There you go. If you want to guarantee a dodge, run the tournaments.
I didn't lose any games at the tournament I ran.
Brilliant.
I said, James, are you going to try and come to the Northwest event?
It's always worth a visit if we can. But again, like, you know, Rich is the big fish in that meta, no offense, Chris. So we always, you know, tech for Rich kind of thing.
None taken.
You see, I've managed to. Exactly. Yeah, I just spike everyone's tea. That's how I do it. Just, you know, offer tea, spike it, done. It's fine.
We were all just convinced for a while that the reason he always goes to an hour long clock is that he's got like just mesmerizing eyes. And it doesn't work under 50 minutes, so he has to get to that 50 minute mark to just mesmerize his opponents.
There we go. I think Ryan had to put up with my getting my money's worth at tournaments when we went to ETC and WTC actually last year, because Ryan would like come over after finishing a game and, like, you know, smashing everyone, and I was there, you know, playing that low clock. You know, you need to get that 2 hour game in. Yeah, that's how you do the game. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My 20-minute turn two. It's all right, it's set up for the rest of the game, boys. Don't worry. Oh, fuck.
Right then, do we have any other questions for Ryan before we move on to the topic? No? Good stuff then. Right, so this will be a bit more of a sort of a free-for-all, but we'll start with Terry, because he's going to be a very excited person come January. But the topic for today is things that we're potentially going to see in CID, and then a kind of an idea as to how we should react as a community to those things that are coming out or have just come out. So things like the trolls and cricks that have just finished. So I will let Terry lead the way with the CID.
Cheers, mate. So is CID becoming a crutch? I think for Legion, it's like a sort of motorized wheelchair. I'm really looking forward to it. I think, like, I've sat back and watched the previous CID processes, and I've contributed a little bit here and there, but I can see that that's been really successful for the factions, and Legion are in a position at the moment, I feel, where we could benefit from going through that process. We've got some really quite exciting releases coming up. We've got Animag the Doomfeaster, who was spoiled at, was it Lock and Load?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. So she is our first non-blighted warlock, we think. Interesting to see how that's gonna pan out. But she's carrying some ogres on top of a stick, some ogre heads. She's bringing Carnage, Gallows, Hexblast, and a rule called Ritual Slaughter, which allows her to cast spells when Ogryn destroy other models. I think a little bit like Caliban's feat. So she seems quite interesting.
What do you think is going to be like replacing the mainstays, if anything? So I think last year with Legion was all, it's Fianna Oracles, and then there was like Abby 2. And then I think the Twins and the Throne, like Twins Double Thrones list seems to be doing the rounds a bit. So with COD, are you expecting anything that the Legion community are absolutely crying out to go into COD, stuff that's not getting played? And likewise, are there any kind of other power lists or things you've got an eye on? They're going to dethrone Fianna Oracles, etc. So, yeah, what's generally going to be looking like?
So the CID process is going to be focused on the Ogryn, which I think most Legion players, excuse me, most Legion players would probably agree that the Ogryn are very much in need of some love and attention. The war mongers are terrible. And then you've got the War Spear.
That's how you really feel, right?
Well, this is coming from experience because I played Primal Terrors at the Firestorm tournament that Ryan won, and I maxed out on Warmongers, and hardly any of them got across the table in four games. But we do have some crumbs of comfort. We've got the Chosen of Everblight, which are really exciting, very powerful, heavy cavalry. And I don't know whether they mean anything by that term, heavy cavalry, whether or not they'll have an ability that is perhaps in addition to or instead of standard cavalry. Armor 17, unyielding, 8 damage boxes, they're looking pretty sweet. And hopefully the models will be really good as well. So they will bring up some really interesting builds, I think. So when we go into January, assuming that all of the CRD process for Ogryn will include every single model. So the Blighted Rotwings, which we know nothing about, Chosen, Animag, Amok, and Golab. I think you could be looking at some quite interesting builds, maybe like Kallus 2. Kallus 2 has Battle List. One thing that Legion can struggle with sometimes is killing or getting through lots of armor or lots of boxes. Perhaps the Chosen of Everblight with something like Kallus 2, potentially Veil 1, potentially Bethane, could be quite interesting as a sort of go-to armor cracking list.
Yeah, the Kalluses look like they're going to be making a comeback, like Kallus 1, with all the infantry and Blightbringer seems to be around. And you were rocking like a Kallus 2 list, weren't you, at Nationals last year as well? You've been playing a bit more Kallus 2.
Yeah, at Nationals I was playing Kallus 1 and Kallus 2. So I played both of them in Children of the Dragon. Kallus 1 with double swordsmen and hex centers, and then battle group, basically. It's pretty good. It attritions really well, which is something that I think we were kind of looking for in our stable of top-end casters. And I think especially with the way that the Steamroller packet has developed, with infantry becoming more useful, and also with solos becoming more useful, Kallus 1 kind of come back into it a little bit. He's bringing like 3-4 units to sit in zones, and then of course feet turn, if he gets good value out of the feet turn, and you're ending or you're starting your next turn with 5, 10, 15 incubi as a general with them, then you've got 5, 10, 15 solos that can run onto a flag, that can run and contest a zone, that can, you know, get into all sorts of awkward spaces. So it's a pretty cool list. I'm going to toy around with it a little bit more. It's different to JVM's list. JVM has been running it in Ravens, which is all the Strider models.
I was going to say, Terry, do you think the big nerf that will be coming in CID will obviously be the nerf to JVM?
Yeah, well, I think JVM is the exception that kind of proves the rule at the moment, because one of the questions I ask people is there a faction that JVM wouldn't do very well in? You know, I think I would consider him one of the best players in the world, and regardless of what he's playing, he's going to do well. I think we're sort of the slight I think we're only talking like a few percentage points here, but the slight difference in faction, where it really hurts is everybody else is not the people that are going to be right at the top, but the people who are kind of fighting amongst the top 10, top 20 in the big tournament. I mean, JVM's a top player. I mean, there's no doubt in that. He's really good.
Yeah, he just seems to pick up any of his lists. He just does well with. So didn't he win some taunts with Fianna? In addition to obviously Dan Price, but yeah, didn't he win some taunts with Fianna the battle? No, not yeah.
Chrissa,
that's the one. Box,
yeah. Yep, the abandoned child of Legion, and he won with her. So I mean, going back to the bit. So that's some of the stuff that's obviously coming out for CID, and there'll probably be some moving parts along with that, other than the. Do you think, like, because you mentioned at the start, is it becoming a bit of a crutch for people? So I'd imagine that the CID is going to obviously bring in the Ogryn, it's going to bring that Ogryn theme together, it's going to bring in the new units themed around that theme, kind of similar to how the Northkin is, which we'll go into in a minute. Do you think that, because if they don't make many changes to the rest of the faction, do you think that would be enough? Do you think it's maybe just reinvigorating people, a couple of tweaks here and there, is that all that's needed? Because I can't imagine they're going to go through the rest of the faction and rest of the beasts and make large amount of changes. And if it's really in that sort of bad state, do you think that they can make enough changes? Or do you think really it might just be that kind of reinvigoration like they did with the trolls?
Yeah, I mean, you can't please everyone. So... I think people need to just kind of set their expectations at we are going to be looking at the Ogryn and everything that's in the Primal Terrors theme force. Anything that is thrown in on top of that is a welcome bonus, but that's certainly what my expectation is, that if it's not in Primal Terrors, we won't be seeing any CID for it.
One of the things I've always wondered with Legion, I think it's probably slightly different to other factions, is like Legion is traditionally the Beast faction, and I think everyone's delighted with Fianna Oracles. I'm still not entirely sure why she's disappeared, and perhaps you can shed some light on that, but I don't feel like I've seen her for ages, and even at the WTC, actually, I didn't see her getting dropped a lot. I think people were dropping kind of Twins and Abby 2 a lot more. But do you think Legion are... A bit more limited from a player perspective, because everyone's used to playing lots of beasts, like that was Legion Mark II. In very rarely used to see any Legion infantry, and now the stuff that's coming through is really, really strong. But a lot of it is infantry builds, like, you know, Kallus II with the list you've talking about, or the Ravens theme. Like, all of a sudden, Legion players are looking at infantry. Do you think that's maybe why some bits of it's slow to adopt? Because it's not really why people jumped into Legion in the first place.
Yeah, definitely. I think going from Mark II to Mark III, Legion changed in a way that all of the go-to pieces, the crutch pieces, Lilith II, Ravagors, you know, that kind of build was just completely dead straight away. You also lost Vale II's theme force, and there were a whole host of other changes, lesser war beasts changing, and losing or changes to a lot of our animi definitely affected the way that we played. And I think that at the start of Mark III, a lot of players were just kind of transplanting their Mark II list into Mark III. The state of play now, though, is that Legion are very much a different faction, combined arms for the most part. But we've got a lot of interesting pieces that have just been released. We've got Ice Switches, which I think are interesting. I think you'll see quite a lot of play from those, especially in things like Oracles. Three Puppet Masters on a stick, something to be ashamed of. I'm quite excited. Mm. We've got Spiny Growth has just gone down to cost 1 through the Minions CID.
Yeah, that was cool.
So, you know, that breathes a little bit of life into the Carnivian. So that you might see the Carnivian a little bit more. Still a little bit too expensive for my taste.
I think, yeah, there is that ongoing conversation around Hordes Beasts. Like, are they all just a bit too expensive for what they do compared to Warjack's power up now? Like, I think the Marauder, being 10 points with power up, I guess that's what people are measuring against. And how much is a Carny, like 18 points still?
I wish it was 18 points. It's 19 points. So the Carnivian chassis really is the focus of a lot of Legion players' frustration with the faction. So the Carnivian itself is 19 points, the Ravagor is 19 points, and the Scythian is 18 points. And the thing is with those three beasts is that they're good beasts. I mean, they're not bad. They've got a lot of offensive output. They're a little bit glass cannon, but that is, you know, that is the faction. Their output is not necessarily the problem. It's their output compared to their cost. And like you said, when you compare it to a 10-point Marauder, or was it a 12-point Juggernaut, or, you know, and you can pick other factions as well. It's really hard to see how you can effectively trade when your thing costs almost twice as much. And its offensive output in melee is roughly the same. So you can go, you know, you can charge a car, you know, you charge a car even into the Marauder. Let's say you kill the Marauder, great. Second Marauder comes in, kills your Carnivian.
I do think though, just from that, and that, I suppose this is kind of in that CID, you do see this quite a lot, and people mention the Marauder, and you could probably say this is bias as a previous Cador player, but I kind of feel that each faction has its own thing that it's kind of, it's not forced to use, but it's just so good that they use it anyway, and then that kind of makes you end up playing the army how it should be. So for example, the stone in Trolls is a fantastic thing for how it should work, and that you don't get anything for that amount of points in any other faction, and the bonuses, you know, can't be got round by most things, so it's just a fantastic piece. And then that's kind of a very troll thing to see on the board. And you get that in each faction. You get all these like weird and wacky things, which if you had those abilities in other factions would be crazy broken, but they're really cheap. It was like the Sentry Stones in Circle and things like that. So the Marauder, I kind of feel, is Kador's thing that shouldn't be compared to, because it's their thing. That's their, like, they have big heavy jacks. Now that doesn't mean that they're unstoppable and unbeatable, because they're all, you know, they're still the only speed 4 and they only hit power 16 and things like that. But, you know, they should be slightly underpointed, because that's what they're incentivizing Kador to take, is heavy jacks. But that is also their weakness, because they don't have weird animi and weird abilities, or in fact anything other than they hit things relatively, and they're relatively tough for their points cost. But I mean, that's not to say that the Carnivian is not too expensive, but I do always, whenever you see these arguments, so, and they always bring up the Marauder, it's like they're bringing up the extreme. It'd be like if any time you brought up a unit, you said, well, this unit's all right, but that's the what's the Menoth unit called, the choir abilities for its points cost are insane. You know, the Beastmasters for Scorn, you know, those kind of units are fantastic and their abilities are ridiculous for their points cost, but it's because they're, like, you know, they're just in there. So, I mean, just talk about the trolls and stuff like that, James.
Just to quickly link on to what you just said there, I feel that all the things you listed, I was actually going to say before you listed even more of them, that they're all support pieces. And one of the things that I feel that happens in War Machines and Hordes is that factions are defined by faction support pieces. So you always had Shepherds in Legion, you always had the Choir in Menoth, you always had the Junior in Signar, you had Arcanists in Rhett. These are things that define the way your faction plays. And I don't think a heavy jack is the same as those things. Like a cheap heavy jack that you can take lots of and that trades really well isn't the same as support pieces that help your faction play in a distinctive style.
True, but I kind of feel because Kador don't have that kind of support. I mean, they've just got it in the Bad Santa, Armored Bad Santa, but he's quite expensive for what he does in comparison. So I kind of feel like they're getting this cheap jack, which is effectively a jack with the support but without the cost. So it's like, it's, as you say, it's like faction defining. That is their faction defining piece. Which, yes, you say, yeah, you know, it's cheap and it's a heavy jack for trading, but that is how they play. So it's kind of like you go, okay, you get this cheap troll stone, which makes all the heavies have better armor, but instead you're just getting it's like the opposite. It's like every Marauder is getting a discount as its support. So, I mean, any other thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the I guess there's two sides. Like, the meta always finds a way to either deal with these things or PP at some point have to fix them. And link this back to like Legion, I think the challenge is whether or not Marauders, in a overly powerful place isn't sure from a Legion. I think it's the same with Circle as well. Like, they think Cadal's god tier because they just can't trade with them. Like, whether or not that's pointed, whether or not the support's in or out or whatever it is, you can't trade a Carny for Marauders. It just doesn't happen. And this is why I think Legion will then start going more towards infantry. And hopefully the CID supports that. So should be good to see what comes out of it. And same with Circle as well. I think they're going towards their CID. Had the stone stuff come out that looks like it could start getting, you know, lights to trade into or up against certain jacks with all the strength buffs, and Bradagus might be making a comeback. And yeah, I think like more of the controls coming back as well to deal with it. So, but their core beasts, the stuff that were just absolutely archetypal Circle lists and Mark II, like the Stalkers and those things, I can't remember seeing them at all, because it's the same reason, they're just too hard to get value out of, especially because pieces have to be more relevant with scenario as well. You can't kind of play that hit and run style as effectively. You have to be present in the middle of the board. So that. But I think we can't talk about COD without talking about trolls. So James, you're living in apparently Troll Christmas, because that's what all the other factions think since your thing came out. How has it been playing like a post COD faction? I think trolls is one of the more recent ones to come out apart from Signar. So yeah, how's it been playing trolls from your side of the table?
I mean, I want you to think back to when Mark III first came out and when you had lots and lots of new options for your faction, whatever you wanted to play, and you're like, I want to play this. And I think we're still in that period. We don't know what is good. Like, we've got so much new stuff. We have a completely new theme with all these new releases for Northkin, with Madrak, with the changes to Grim 1, with the changes to Borka 2, with the new caster that's come out. Like, there's so much stuff with new beasts that can be slotted into old themes, with, you know, the new bomb-throwing unit from Northkin can get thrown into Creel. What's it called? Whatever. The shooty theme. Like, yes. Like, it's all just, it's bewildering. There's so much new stuff. And there's kind of been a slow delay on models as well. And there's not a lot of tournaments happening because of this time of year. And it's just trying to work out what is good. And I mean, on top of this, we've had the minion releases. And one of the interesting things with CID there is that, like, if you were to ask people in the UK, what's the big bad at the moment? What is the big scary thing on the meta? What would you all say?
Chris?
No, I know what I would say.
Oh,
Madrak 1. No. My prediction for 2018 is the Og Trog Mystic Speaker.
Exactly, because it shuts down Haley Free, which was the correct answer, not Chris. Good go, though, lads.
this is why I present and don't actually do very well.
Like, isn't it interesting that hordes are getting a horde specific two options that help against clouds? Like, this is huge, and it's not just like one option; it's a unit and a solo. So, like, that gives you so much like choice, especially with all these themes suddenly getting solos and units from minions in them. Like, it's a fantastic time, and it's just overwhelming. Like, to be honest, but there's so much going on, and it's every time one of these small decisions happens, it opens up all these options again. Like you know, everyone suddenly got minions options in their lists, and that's a huge option. Are you suddenly taking, you know, Eyeless? I'm taking Eyeless in list because I want Puppet Master and I want to get rid of, you know, upkeep spells. It's just, like, it's overwhelming and it's brilliant because suddenly you've got all these different dojoing options.
How do you guys feel like the meta keeps up with this? So, I completely agree. We've had a load of stuff drop, and I think every faction is thinking about what they do with it. Like Scorn at the minute, one of the lists I've been dojoing is like Morgue on Morgue 2 minion list. So the Disciples of Agony, which is awesome. So I do have a Dracodile landing in a couple of weeks. It's going to be fantastic. But obviously a lot of change going through and more to come through. Now, one of the things that tournament players always consider is what's the meta doing, and you build for that. So with Sudit, how do you feel about going into 2018 with COD on the cards and the stuff coming out with what we've seen so far? Like, how do you guys feel about that affects your approach to tournaments or the meta, etc.? Like, is it stable enough to start planning and getting listed? WTC's seems going to be January, February, or certainly around then. So can you lock list in in this day and age, or is there too much variance with what's going on with COD? What do you think? Well, and you've been quiet. You've been sat in the back, not talking for a while. So what do you make of that?
So there's kind of, I think there's two angles to that question, in that there's kind of how you approach the game and how other people approach the game. And I think CID, a lot of people kind of see it as a mean to an end. Oh, I'm not going to play XYZ until it goes through CID. Well, it's almost kind of just, how to say it, I think like they're slowly chipping off what I would call is above the power curve. So they brought Halo 2 down, they brought Denny 1 down. And just in the process of CID and like the Mark 3 changes in general, they brought the bottom of the game up. So I think, whereas if you look in like Mark 2, towards the end of Mark 2, the power disparity between the top of the game, like the pre-nerf Gatsby 2, the pre-nerf Harvey, Halo 2, like the disparity between those at the top of the game and the casters at the bottom of the game was just immense. You would never see those casters at the bottom of the game. Whereas actually now with the change of the theme force and the small incremental buffs from CID and minions and support pieces, that kind of stuff, you're starting to see much wider range of casters and lists and themes. And it's a I think there's a point to be made there, as well as too many people get hung up on the 3 points of a theme force, whereas actually I think the 3 points are actually the silver lining, and the theme force benefit you get is why you should play that theme force. So if you're going to play Revenant, you're playing Ghost Fleet because you get more Revenant. If you're going to play Warjack, you've got a choice of like Black Industries where you can deliver your Warjack, or if you're playing a character that can deliver your Warjack, like Agathia or Coven, you'll play Slaughter Fleet because that brings like Gangfighter for your Warjack, which is immense. So actually you look at that theme force and you go, well, actually I'm only getting 8 3 points, what's the point? And it's like, but a casual +2/+2, basically a Mark II choir for every one of your Crix Warjacks, it's just, you can't put a value on that, it's immense. And I think that's where the game is at, in that there are too many people focusing on what they haven't got or what other people have got, rather than actually looking what they have got, trying to find new lists and just sacking up and getting on with it.
Love it. We need that on a t-shirt.
Well, I do it. I can manage it with my shit faction like Crick. So if I can manage it, other people should be able to.
Half the people have just thrown stuff at the speakers. But I mean, right, you've done well. That's the thing, like, your approach to the game has always been positive. I'm gonna find see someone take stuff. So yeah, okay, you're playing Crix, which is a strong faction now, but like the year before last you took like Kane 1 to the WC tryout day, and even when you're playing Crix you've got some real junk you put in. So your approach is always find stuff that works and play it. And you see, when I was playing with you on the team last year, you knew why you were playing stuff and why it was strong and how to use it. And I think a lot of other players may just look at a list and think this is strong without spending time thinking why, and then probably get quite frustrated if it doesn't work into everything. And that's when it gets into the whole they have, I don't have thing like that. So I think, you know, we should be more like Ryan.
Be like Ryan.
Exactly. Complaining about your faction never won anyone a tournament.
Yeah, like, I have to complain a little bit. Like, if I'm all about the underdog factions, which is why I play Crix. Like, I couldn't play like one of the top OP factions, like Grimkin or Signar or Scorn. I couldn't do it.
Oh, you can go down that though.
Yeah. So what's coming out next year for Crix then, Ryan? What are we looking at?
What am I looking at? Well, what I'm building at the moment is a Bradigus list, so I'm probably not the best person to ask. Crits-wise, this is quite hard to answer at the moment because there's a lot of new stuff coming in the new year with the shard stuff and the subtixis and like the Black Ogre and the Blood Gorges. All that sort of stuff is kind of coming out the pipe of CID in probably in the new year somewhere. And then the new models there, March, April time, maybe May time, by the time they get over here and get cast and stuff. They're kind of hard to plan. I think Ghost Fleet is in that space where people will stop playing it, so people will stop teching for it, at which point somebody will bring it back, smash everyone for 2 weeks until people like relearn that they're supposed to bring something for Ghost Fleet, and then they'll shelve it again. So I think the consistent list you'll see will be Dark Age, just because it's a really solid anchor for any of the other theme forces. And then it's kind of all down to personal taste, as in what cast do you want to play. I think Slaughter Fleet will be the sleeper choice when CID drops, especially if Barathrum makes it into that theme force, because he's, he's very aggressively costed for the amount of abilities on his card and the output he's got. So personally, I'm excited for Slaughter Fleet.
I think one of the strengths of Crix has got to be the variants. Like, I don't think there's any faction in the game that can play such a wide variety of lists that all ask different questions. And I would say that Crix at the moment is definitely the question faction, and that you could bring two different, completely different lists, or you could bring two other completely different lists, and it's really, really hard to tech for because you don't know what they're going to be bringing each time.
Absolutely, and I think feeding off of that is probably why we don't see a lot of Scavrous. And that you look at Scavrous and you go, this cast has got a threat extender, he's got a hit buff, he's got a damage buff, like he's got feet that boost all the spells. But you look at the sum total of that caster and he's answering questions, he's not asking them, and Crix as a faction can't afford not to be asking the questions, which is why I think he shelved in favour of other casters that ask harder questions, because you compare two lists that can both probably play, each list can maybe play into 70% of the field, so you've got good options for dropping both lists, but they both present very different problems for your opponent. Like, even just looking at something like Scar One and Dark Coast is a really strong list in its own right. I know Brandon Andrews have been playing the shit out of it, but if you took Scar One in Black Industry, suddenly the guns you're planning on shooting the Banes and the Wraith Engine and that with, you can't shoot them because the Jats are armor 21, armor 23, the shield guards, Necroprotect fixing them up. So that presents one problem, and then that could be paired with like a Coven Infernal Machines with double soul hunters and faulty mechanithralls, and you go, well, actually I've got all these guns for that can't do anything against both of those lists. I definitely agree with what you're saying. Crix are definitely the problem faction at the moment. They have to be presenting the problems and making the opponent try to answer them, I guess.
Just to support your statement there, by the way, yeah, that there was a steamroller in Chorley recently, a Christmas event, and just to prove that obviously Ryan is playing the underdog faction, in the top four there were two Minions players. Some chump with Grimkin won it, but the bottom two factions were both Crix, and they were both the only Crix players. So, in the field of Minions and Grimkin and Retribution and stuff, it was the Crix players who actually came out bottom. So obviously Ryan is, he's on hard mode, just trying to get his way through the Steamroller series.
What we want to see, Ryan, is a bit of Sturgis too.
You say that, I have actually been looking at Sturgis 2 and Dark Case, because he brings occultation. No word of a lie, I have. Because he brings occultation to deliver one unit, he's got a throw extender, and he's got Parasite, which is basically all you need. So he's the only caster that's got Parasite and occultation. You can take Agathia, who's got Parasite and Eternal Stealth, but he has all game stealth. So I think there is Sturgis 2, like, it goes back to like the top and the bottom of the game. Like, the gap is nowhere near as big as it used to be. and I'm not even sure Sturgis 2 is the worst caster in the faction anymore. I think it might be Morty 2. I can't stand that caster, even if she has got spell piercer.
It's a tip of the hat to Golly.
Yeah, Sturgis 2 is possible. Maybe in the new year when I've stopped playing Worlds.
When you've stopped playing with stones.
You have heard it here first. Sturgis 2 is the new submarine caster. Two advantages. One, Brian said he's good. And two, even when you play against your opponents, they won't know the fuck is going on and what he does, because they never would have even known he even existed. So, guys. Well, thank you very much for that chat. Hopefully it's been illuminating for the audience. Just before I wrap everything up, I believe Rich has some details on future WTC qualifying events.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's probably just worth mentioning the certainly for Wales and England WTC events. There's also, I think the Irish boys have got a lot going on with their WTC as well. So check out their Facebook for that. But England have just released the or open applications for captains and players. So if you are thinking of trying out for WTC, then we do give it a shot. I think a lot of people on the podcast have been involved. So this year, myself and James are on the committee for England. Chris was on the committee last year, did a great job. Ryan is obviously a seasoned WTC team player. And Terry, are you throwing your hat in the ring this year, Terry, for WTC?
I have, yes. And if you want to apply for Team Wales, I think applications are open until the end of the year. I've put in my application a couple of weeks ago, so yeah, really stoked and hoping I can get the time off work to go. And obviously,
so it's end of the year for Wales WTC, and I don't think we set a date yet for England WTC applications. But yeah, if you get in as soon as possible, certainly for Janks, I think there is a WTC invitational for England players in Feb. And hopefully by then we'll have captains picked as well. So very excited about it. I think certainly Terry and Ryan's our guests, if you could, if you're going to give a kind of message / guidance to people thinking about getting involved in WTC, but maybe haven't thrown a hat in the ring yet or aren't sure if they should do, what would you say to them?
Shall I go first?
Sounds okay. Good.
Yeah, so I was really fortunate enough to go to the WTC in 2015 in Ireland, and then in 2016 in the Netherlands. I've been playing this hobby for, I think, four machine holds, like 6 years, 7 years, something like that. And they are the two best tournaments I've ever been to. To not only play as an individual, but to play on a team as well with your friends, it's just magical. And you get to meet everybody from all over the world. So even if you only think you've got a sliver of a chance of qualifying for your country, you've got to go for it, man. You've got it. It's just balls.
Yeah. Ryan, what do you say to the aspiring or interested WTC player? What do you say to them?
So, a lot of people have a tendency to underestimate their ability at the game and possibly overestimate the standard at which they played at the WTC, and that, yes, maybe the top teams are a very small pool of incredible players that I personally wouldn't count myself among. So actually, for a lot of players, they may be looking at their ability at the game and going, well, actually, I'm not winning these big events. But if you're consistently playing the people that are doing well at those events and you're giving them a game and you're not just rolling over, then by all means, apply for the team, make it to the selection day, because I guarantee, even if you don't qualify for the team, you'll probably learn more about your ability at the game and what you need to do to progress in those three or four games on that selection day than you will in probably 6 months worth of tournament. And whether you do or don't make a team, like, try and make the effort to get to the event itself as a spectator or the solo masters. Like, you can't put into words the energy and the vibe of the event. It's completely unlike anything else I've been to.
Yeah, I think that's a really key point, actually, is how supportive it is. Like, well, last year's my first year on WTC, applying as a player. And I think beforehand there was a bit of apprehension of, like, well, you know, you've got a lot of the big guns there, and you know, they've been around the game for a while, and actually you can't realize just getting involved at one, you learn an absolute ton. Two, the gaps in the game and skills, you know, they're not as big as you may think. And yeah, even if you do find there, you know, that you've got some holes in your game, things like that, you'll definitely find out what you can do to improve. And it's that whole focus practice idea, like playing a game with you know, like Paul, who was on our team last year, who's really clinical, playing a game against him and him like dissecting what you've done, it was so valuable compared to, you know, just playing the same pool of players. So getting out and playing different people and better people is good. And three, it's an absolute blast as well. It's such good fun. It's absolutely amazing. Chris and James, any closing comments on WTC before we call it a day?
Just from the last year's perspective, one of the things you do get is one of the sort of preconceptions is that it's kind of like a boys' club, and that, you know, you're not going to get in because you're not mates with the, you know, the people that were in the team last year and all this kind of thing. As one of the committee members last year, the reason why I joined was to make sure that this wasn't the case. And it's not, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you'll see a lot of people in the teams who are from possibly the same club or possibly know each other. But the chances are the reason why they're there is that they've done well at events. They've shown up to the day, like Ryan said. They've consistently, you know, shown that they know the game. They have a good understanding of the game. And therefore, when we come to doing the selection as committee and as captains, it's an easy decision to pick them as the people to go because they're showing all the attributes. So if you're, you know, if you have this opinion that you're not going to get in, if as long as you can go, you can show you understand the game, you can show you can consistently play well, you can play well and confidently, that's the main thing. Even though you might play into someone like Pat is still, we think, human. So, you know, if you play into him, play him as you would at any sort of event, and then just, you know, show that you can do this confidently, then that's going to put you in good stead for selection. You know, if you go with the opinion that, oh, I'm not going to get picked because someone else, you know, is just someone's mate's going to get picked, it isn't the case. It's just that they also just turn up and they play confidently, and therefore when, you know, when you're trying to pick a selection of people and there's very little between them, results wise, ability wise, you know, you'll pick on the other attributes, which is like how friendly are they, are they good representative of the country, because they're going to go and represent England or Wales or Ireland, you know. So at that point, if you're just kind of this sullen person, you know, if you're this sullen person who's, you know, doesn't have much confidence in yourself, well then we're going to pick that up on the day, and we'll say, well, these are pretty much the same, but this person's really sort of confident, this person wasn't really that confident, and so that might be what is the difference in selection. So really just sort of believe in yourself, right? Everyone's human, and as Ryan said, just go along and do it, and the committee and the captains will see that.
Definitely. And just to add to that, what have you got to lose? Like, literally, if you apply and you don't think you're good enough, you're going to go along, you're going to play against good players, and you're going to get a day out of good games. Like last year when I went and applied, I got games against Pat. You know, I got a game against Pat Dunford, you know. And how often do you get good practice like that? So if you just see it as a chance to improve, and who knows what happens, you might turn up, you might get picked, even if you don't get selected. You know, it's a nice day out, and you're, you know, you're pushing yourself. Maybe not this year, maybe next year, but just, you never know who else is going to apply, and you never know how many spaces are going to be there. So what do you lose? It's not like we're going to put a big list out after the selection and say, look at these people, they're too terrible to get onto the WTC team. It's not like that. It's all, you know, you apply, and then we, you know, we pick the best people, and it's great.
Oh yeah.
And also, just as a little, you know, talking WTC, but that's kind of the reason, as Rich mentioned in the last episode, why we're putting the Super Series together, is because we want people to play ball, we want people to mix, we want people to meet each other and to play these kind of games, which will hopefully only strengthen future WTC applications and hopefully get us an England win in the future. I mean, obviously Welsh and Welsh second, but, you know, get that England win there. Right then, guys, so unless there's anything else, I will do the plugs, and then we will get out of here. No? Okay, so thank you very much for listening. No. Oh, sorry. I've been doing something in the background there. Right, so if you want to keep in touch with us, get in touch with us on the Facebook. We've got it's all the same thing. It's WMHUKISS on Facebook. We've also got Twitter, which again is WMH sorry, WMHUKISS. And if you get in touch with us, and on the website as well, it's got all the details of all the events. We'll keep that up to date as we get the events in. So not everything is completely confirmed, because obviously we're working to the future, and some things like venues and dates may change. But if you keep an eye on there, keep an eye on the Facebook, keep an eye on the Twitter, get in touch with us personally. Not a problem with me or Rich if you get in touch with us on Facebook, preferably to do with the events, but obviously you could have a chat War Machine and stuff. Any weird pictures, send them to Rich, not me. So yeah, and as I said, you know, keep in touch. Hopefully this will grow, and next year, I mean, for 2019, this will all be nice and simple and inset. So obviously the better we make this year, or 2018, the better future years will become. So thank you very much, and thank you for everyone for putting time in your schedules. I know we had to arrange a fee with James's agent, and we had to disturb Ryan's popcorn time. So thank you very much for coming on, and as I say, any feedback, just let us know, and ciao for now.
Sorry, Chris, why didn't we do it yesterday?
Oh, I knew it was going. So
good. I was too busy winning a tournament with James.
On that note, happy Christmas to each and every one of us.
Happy Christmas and New Year to all.
Bye.
Cheers, fellas. All the best.